Join us on The Fifth Kind for this episode, courtesy of Gaia.com. Follow the links in the description to explore more from the series.
Ancient cultures around the world had a ruling class that practiced intentional cranial modification, a procedure to deliberately reshape the skull to express status, wealth, and nobility. Some of the oldest examples of this were dated as far back as 5,000 to 12,000 years ago in China and spans continents around the world. Was this an attempt to imitate an advanced race of beings with elongated heads? If so, might they be extraterrestrials? And what evidence suggests that they actually existed?
In my opinion, there was an advanced civilization on this planet at one point who were our progenitors. I very much believe they had elongated skulls from what we can see in all our ancient iconography and mythologies, and subsequently, all the other civilizations that followed attempted to mimic them. Sometimes that included cranial deformation, at other times that included different hats and symbolism, but we know that they existed and we know that they came before us.
Why should humans make elongated head, and how? We know it from Central and South America. When the Spanish conqueror arrived, for example, in today's Peru, they saw some of the young priest boys which had long heads, and they asked them, how did these long heads come from? They brought them at home. And at home, they saw the Spanish conqueror, they saw the babies. The babies were just born. They just left the mother's womb. And because the head, the bones are soft, they pressed the bones of the boys so that the bones became longer and longer.
The reason that this mimicry or cranial deformation took place is because these rulers with elongated skulls were venerated in the ancient world. Who were they trying to mimic? Who were they trying to uphold? Again, we have this very ancient connection to these rulers with elongated skulls.
While elongated skulls are a worldwide phenomenon, some of the best examples to have been scientifically examined come from Peru. 4 hours south of Lima is the Paracas Peninsula of Peru, an area surrounded by rich agricultural landscapes and a civilization that can be traced back to at least 5,000 years. It is here, in 1928, that archaeologist Julio Tello discovered a collection of enormously elongated skulls. Canadian scientist Brian Forrester has lived in Peru for the past 10 years, dedicating his entire focus to studying these specimens.
And it wasn't until about 12 years ago when I entered this museum here, owned by Senior Juan Navarro, who was a local amateur archaeologist, that I saw my first elongated skull. And actually, it's a mummified one. And coming from a biological pre-med background, I was astonished at seeing this because I couldn't understand what it was. We have examples of skulls, the oldest ones, which appear to be natural elongated skulls. And then later on, when you have the Nazca culture interacting with the Paracas, that's when the head binding began. Standard academia states that the Paracas arrived on the coast of Peru or evolved as a group, as a cohesive group, probably around 800 BC or 600 BC, but that's not based on any radiocarbon analysis at all. It's a supposition. So we're the only ones who have been able to actually do radiocarbon testing, and the results that we have been able to get do fit into that timeline. The oldest one that we've been able to radiocarbon test is around 2,400 years old. So that's near the beginning of the so-called Paracas period. Again, among the original elongated skulls, which we believe were born with elongated skulls. They have eye sockets which are probably 50% larger than normal and are more vertically elongated. Also, the jaw, the lower jaw, the mandible, is much larger than normal. And then there are also these two holes in the back of the skull here, which are a genetic characteristic. And what they probably indicate is that was for blood and nerve flow in order to properly feed and nourish the vertically elongated head.
In every single case, these elongated skulls are different from normal human beings. For so long, the experts, the archaeologists, the anthropologists have told us that these skulls were created by human beings by pushing the brain when the person was a child and deforming the skull, the head. But now we know through analysis of DNA, they are not similar to us.
Radiocarbon testing has dated the oldest elongated skull to approximately 2,400 years old. That's the beginning of the so-called Paracas period.
The intriguing thing about the fact that the earliest elongated skulls, almost 100, if not 100% of them, they show that they had, while they were alive, a very rich, dark, reddish hair. And that is not a Native American characteristic. That's another suggestion of migration from somewhere else. Most people think of red hair as being the characteristic of Scandinavians or Irish people or Scottish people. But in fact, it goes back to the Middle East. And that's somewhat in the area where we're starting to see a genetic DNA relationship as well. Two major hair experts studying hundreds of samples of Paracas red hair have stated that black hair always remains black. Red hair, of course, over the course of time can lighten to blondish. You know, that is a genetic characteristic that doesn't fit in with standard history of Native American people of the coast of Peru. And the other thing is none of the skulls that we've examined show canine teeth. So they don't have the canine, you know, predatory meat-eating tooth that we have. They're all quite normal or regular looking. And that's an anomaly. Well, the basic characteristics that distinguish cranial deformation from a natural skull is the lack of the suture line. I'm not talking about a partial lack. It's non-existent.
In a normal human skull, the sagittal suture, which is a connective tissue joint between the two parietal bones of the skull, appears from the frontal plate and continues over the dome of the skull, connecting with the occipital plate in the rear. Many of the skulls discovered in Paracas, however, are completely devoid of a sagittal suture. Might this be a genetic anomaly of a human being, or point to other possibilities worth considering?
We performed analysis on the skull volume, the size of the skulls, as compared to humans. The skulls were had a larger volume than human skulls, slightly larger volume. The morphology of the skull plates, so there's sutures that are very well evident on a cranium. The sutures, where the two plates of a cranium, the cranial skull, come together, were different in the elongated skulls. So we were able to, you know, document all these morphological differences with the skulls. And we're then as well able to perform a DNA extraction of tissue samples from both of the skulls.
While intentional cranial modification changes the shape of the skull, the question remains, would it alter other features that are characteristic of a regular human skull?
It's mainly in the skull characteristics that we find these massive anomalies, including what's called the foramen magnum, and that is where your spinal column enters the bottom of your skull. In the original elongated skulls of this area, the foramen magnum is a full 1 inch back from where it's supposed to be, because with us, of course, it's at the balance point, so it's almost in the center. But the original Paracas, it's basically 1 inch backwards, and that matches with the vertical elongated skull characteristic.
They are human mutations because we have a fetus with an elongated skull. We have the hole that joins the head to the spine is moved backwards more than 1 centimeter. That is not possible. If you do that with a human being, you kill it. The foramen hole is moved, and that proves that this is not the same kind of human beings.
When intentional cranial modification is carried out on a baby, the head binding usually begins a month after birth when the head is most pliable and continues for 6 months or longer. Previous discoveries of fetuses and newborns with an elongated head suggest that intentional cranial modification could not have taken place, since it takes at least 6 months to modify the shape of its head to produce the desired results.
So if you deform the head, you can get it to be more conic, but you won't be able to get it to change its volume.
We've had many doctors, many nurses, many dentists, and even like brain specialists and brain surgeons and people like that physically come and look at the skulls. And again, what most of them say is, that's not something that I studied in medical school, especially the lack of the sagittal suture, the fact that the eye sockets are at least 50% larger than normal, the two holes in the back of the skull, and the fact that the foramen magnum is a full 1 inch back. That can't be explained through head binding or anything like that. That has to be genetic. That's proof positive, according to medical experts that I've shown that discovery to, that these were not Homo sapiens sapiens. At minimum, they were a subspecies of Homo sapien.
Some of these skulls are very well preserved. There's hairs and there's skin and there's tissue in them. And so they're fairly easy to test. And so the age of the remains was given, but not the DNA analysis. And so I was fortunate enough to be able to get samples and send them to universities to do analysis.
Tissue samples taken from two of the Paracas skulls by geneticist William Brown and scientist Nassim Harmin were given to the UCLA Center for Genomic and Bioinformatics Lab. Ancient DNA extraction was performed, and by early 2019, they started analyzing the whole genome.
We have preliminary results from the testing we've done, and it appears to have anomalies that are very interesting. Some of the anomalies that we're finding in the testing is making us think that there could be a significant possibility that these are the result of some kind of different species, at least, than the Homo sapiens sapien.
The 1,000 Genomes Project is the largest public catalog of human variation and genotype data. Initial genetic test results of the Paracas skulls relative to this genome catalog reveals a large degree of gene variation. What this indicates is either non-random changes in the DNA or a high degree of genetic divergence from Homo sapiens. Perhaps even more fascinating is the analysis done with a Johns Hopkins deep sequencing genomics core. No alignment or match to the human reference genome was found. Could these DNA samples from the Paracas elongated skulls possibly come from an extinct race of people?
Mostly we've done the analysis on the mitochondria DNA, which shows some significant variations that may suggest that at least on the mother's side, there was some alteration of the genome structure that makes us think that it might have been a sister, you know, species from the Homo sapiens sapiens, something similar, but not quite the same. And we don't know where those genes would have come from.
The standard story, again, from academics is that all of the people of this area were descended from people whose ancestors crossed the Bering Land Bridge. And if that was the case, then the maternal haplogroup, which is the mother's DNA, would be haplogroup B, because only four bloodlines or haplogroups cross the Bering Land Bridge, as far as we know, to get to this general area. And those are haplogroups A, B, C, and D, with B being the far most prominent one.
A haplogroup is a genetic population group of people who share a common ancestor on the paternal or maternal lineage. Haplogroups are assigned letters of the alphabet, and refinements consist of additional number and letter combinations.
So we did that analysis, and we traced the mitochondrial genome of these two elongated skulls to the haplogroup that most closely compares to the mitochondrial DNA of the two elongated skulls is in the Black Sea region of Central Asia. This particular haplogroup is most strongly represented in this region around the Black Sea. And it's very interesting because in that region, you find elongated skulls.
You don't have genetic adaptation in 2,000 or 3,000 or even 10,000 years. You're talking probably hundreds of thousands of years. So you have this sudden rise of similar culture or similar looking people, quote unquote, in very distant, separate lands. That doesn't fit in with evolution as we know it. You know, a sudden appearance and then a rapid disappearance of these people.
It's very unusual because in South America, you very rarely or never find that particular mitochondrial haplotype. But these elongated skulls, that's where they mapped to. And so what that would suggest is that the maternal lineage, the mother's side, came in whatever way from that geographic region. These skulls, the mitochondrial genome from them, had upwards of 50 single nucleotide variants. So more than double the amount you normally see in the human population anywhere. For comparison, a Neanderthal mitochondrial genome compared to humans has about 150 or more single nucleotide variants. The Denisovan lineage, 230 or more. And so the mother might be a sister species to human. At what point do you call something a separate species? The mitochondrial DNA, the mother side, is not closely related to any extant human populations either.
If DNA sequencing derived from these elongated skulls reveal anomalies relating to the maternal lineage, then what was uncovered from the paternal lineage?
What you have is a Y chromosome that is not matching the human reference genome, Y chromosome, suggesting that the father was not Homo sapien. And if that was the case, it would go a long way in explaining why we detected such a high degree of variation in the rest of the genome. Because this variation is coming from a not entirely Homo sapien father.
This is very unusual. It's very unclear where and what, if there was a cross between different species that produced this elongated skull feature, what was the other species? Now, when we get a better understanding of the nuclear DNA of the father side of the equation, we might get a little more of these answers. But preliminary results show that the father side, the nuclear DNA, is less related to human than a banana, right? Which has, a banana is about 40% the same sequencing as humans. What it's looking like, very preliminary, it doesn't even have 40% match to the Homo sapiens sapien.
Might the anomalous test results reveal from the DNA of the Podocus elongated skulls be evidence of another species of humans? Or is it possible that some kind of genetic tampering has taken place?
If it's a kind of mutation that you don't naturally see, that means that it's suggestive that the changes were directed by an intelligent agent. So I could produce that kind of ratio of changes by directly engineering or influencing the genome of an organism.
These highly strange anomalies are not unique to the Podocus elongated skulls. In the Nazca region of Peru, Gaia investigators uncovered a female mummified humanoid that the team named Maria. She also had an elongated skull with mysterious DNA.
It is interesting because the DNA analysis for Maria had a 20% matching homology to the human reference genome. That's what we saw with the Y chromosome for the elongated skulls. Very interesting. I could offer some speculation on that. Maybe the father looked more like Maria, that kind of hominoid form. That would be in agreement with the similarity between only 20% matches up with the human reference genome, just like what was seen with Maria.
Other medical specialists examined Maria. What they observed were anomalies similar to those from the Podocus region. Dr. M.K. Jesse, a musculoskeletal radiologist at the University of Colorado Hospital in Denver, looked at the scans.
The shape of the skull is interesting. It's very elongated, an atypical appearance of a human skull like you and I know. The skull, I don't see any suture lines. There's no bones that are separate in the skull. They all appear fused. So this appears to be a solid structure.
If the CAT scans and X-rays proved it was organic bone and the bones didn't seem to be altered, could this be evidence of a new species? Angel Romero, a genomic specialist from Mexico, seems to think that may be so.
I have to say that this sample contains DNA that we currently don't know. It could be from an organism that has not been studied. Perhaps there was some microbiological contamination of the samples, but it could also be original DNA from these bodies. That means that these bodies could belong to a previously unknown species.
What the DNA results reveal from the Nazca mummy, Maria, are striking anomalies similar to those from the Podocus samples.
Of the DNA that was isolated, only 25% of the total matched any known human gene. So that means that 75% of this DNA is not matching any known human reference sequence. And, you know, this is pretty rigorous because there's like the 1,000 Human Genome Project, where they have done whole genome sequencing of over 2,000 individuals from every continent on Earth, and compiled kind of like a average human reference genome. And so you take these sequences isolated from the sample with this being, and you go and you compare them to that human reference genome data, and only 25% match up. 75% don't.
The initial question we asked of gene sequencing laboratories in Canada, Mexico, and Russia was, does this DNA match any modern human DNA, or any DNA in their databanks? The answer from all three labs was no.
We know about the carbon-14 analysis that Maria is 1,700 years old. We know that the structure of the body is not similar to human beings. We know that the head is elongated, that the eyes were bigger than ours. That's more or less what we know of Maria.
While remarkably similar anomalies are found in both Nazca and Paracas, the question remains, what might these be?
When we examined these larger natural genetic specimens of elongated skulls we find in Paracas of Peru, we have to ask ourselves, could this larger brain capacity be the product of beings that never evolved here? I tend to think that's the case, especially when we look at the differences between the Paracas skulls and even the Incan royalty who exhibited various genetic abnormalities.
I know for sure that some extraterrestrials had sex with humans. Definitely. Just read the Bible. In the beginning, when the sons of the gods saw that the daughters of men were beauty, they took them to wife. Which sons of the gods? There are no sons of the gods. God has no sons. It was the extraterrestrials. Read the book of Enoch. The book of Enoch gives the name of the guardians of the sky. And 36 of them went down to the planet Earth. And they had definitely sex with humans, which is written in the book of Enoch. And the result were giants. And the giants had elongated heads. That's why the humans adored them. The humans were afraid of them. Later, the humans copied it. They wanted to look like them. There was definitely a sexual contact between extraterrestrials and humans.
A recent publication has disclosed that the Paracas skulls have 60% more mass, as well as being 25% larger than a human skull, with mounting evidence that the elongated skulls in Peru may be of unknown genetic origins, or possibly even extraterrestrial. Is it possible we need to re-examine our human history?
It challenges our histories. It challenges us because the narrative has to be completely torn apart and rewritten again. And I don't think that traditional academia has wanted to look at that up to this point.
To me, what happened with the elongated heads and what it says about humanity is that we don't have all of the ingredients to be able to understand the evolution of humanoids and what eventually produced the Homo sapiens sapiens. We're missing links. All of a sudden, this Homo sapiens sapiens occurs, which has a larger skull, right? Almost a doubling of the brain size and so on, much smaller stature, that this change happened as a result of an alteration of the gene that was done by external means.
They were special people, probably hybrids, probably they were created, that we don't know, or probably they were a special race that disappeared. That they were here and disappeared, or they come from somewhere else and they left. It's very difficult to understand this, but the only thing we know for sure is that those heads were not deformed, were not created by other human beings. They are natural, and behind them has to be a fascinating story.
Is it possible that their ancestors came from another star system? My mind and my heart and my body and spirit are open to those possibilities because they are such an anomaly. Were their ancestors alien? It's possible. Were they to some degree alien? That's possible. Were they a hybrid of human and some closely related life form from this planet or beyond? That we don't know. But what we do know definitively is they were not Homo sapiens sapiens.
I think it's entirely possible that this progenitor group with elongated skulls had bred and intermingled with various groups of ancient peoples. And as time went on and this lineage started to dissipate, it was mimicked, it was copied with the artificial deformation. And this group may have disappeared into the background. They may have gone home to whatever planet they came from. But one thing is for certain, that they were here on our planet. They influenced our cultures, our religions, our art, and they made a gigantic impact.
It is without doubt that humans around the world practiced intentional cranial modification to venerate ancient beings of advanced culture. But who were they venerating? Could the people of Europe or the Middle East have migrated to the Americas long before it's conventionally believed? Is it not as likely that the unusual characteristics of the Paracas skulls may possibly be extraterrestrial in origin? When DNA testing reveals characteristics that cannot be identified in a worldwide database, does this prove the case? As ongoing efforts to examine the elongated skulls continue, perhaps one day we may trace our human origins to our cosmic family. In our next episode, explore the possibility of extraterrestrials in the Bible.
Thank you for watching The Fifth Kind. We trust you enjoyed this episode, courtesy of Gaia.com. Follow the links in the description to explore more from the series, along with thousands of original documentaries and programs.
In December 2020, retired Israeli security chief said, "There is a galactic federation and they're staying hidden right now because we're not ready for them."
The Galactic Federation are concerned.
Paul Hellyer told me we had extraterrestrials helping our scientists on Earth at bases, and there was full cooperation.
The Galactic Federation is comprised of countless species and civilizations.
These are all intelligences that are influencing our technology, our consciousness.
There was a reptilian that was part of this war over our species.
The Galactic Federation started as a defense treaty from reptilian expansion into our galaxy.
The Galactic Federation is trying to help us.
They're out there, and they are watching.
There's not only one Galactic Federation, there are federations all over the place in the universe.